Hi, Greg Perry, the Historic Preservationist. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 65. Talking about this episode, your little townhouse, your country house, to add a little flavor to it, to add some vines, some naturally occurring vines creeping up the side of your dwelling. But you must do this with restraint because it can cause issues with clapboard and bricks and such. So let's talk about vines for town and country. So, you know, whether shading a rural porch or clinging to urban brickwork, vines have lived in harmony with old houses for centuries. Two hardy native vines in the hop and Virginia creeper, both have been grown in North America since roughly the early 17th century. But as vigorous as they are, vines require a supplementary structure, a trellis, a fence, or even the house itself, in order to grow straight up. Some historic supports, as well as careful placement, will keep them on the climb at all times. Traditionally, a country vine, the hop, has an affinity for informal cottage gardens. Nothing so quickly or generously clothes a rough wooden arbor. The hop's rough stems can grow as much as 6 to 12 inches in a single day, reaching up to 20 feet in a season. Its dark leaves are almost heart-shaped, similar to small grape leaves. So in late summer, the vine's loose flower clusters turn a bronzy amber, truly warm and romantic in the October sun. Orange fruits deep within the papery petals of the flowers give off a bitter yet pleasant aroma hops are quite known for. So as early as about 1648, imported hops were in commercial production as a flavoring and preservative for beer. Settlers must have been relieved to discover the species growing wild, since the hop vines was indispensable for making barm, a yeasty residue of fermentation used to leaven bread. The flowers of this natural sedative were often stuffed into little sleep pillows. George Washington reputedly used one. So important was the hop vine in colonial life that when a family moved, the treasured vine moved with them. So even after its use as a household staple fell into decline, the adaptable vine's dense foliage was prized for shading verandas from Maine to California. To establish a screen to cover an arbor, plant roots 18 inches apart in loose, rich soil in a sunny site. The hop's lax stems need support, anything around which the vines can wrap themselves. Some old-timers grow this twining vine on a tall pole close to the side of the house, just as their parents and grandparents did. Hop vines also make an effective ground cover. To maintain vigorous growth and discourage overwintering insects, cut the vine back and clear away debris in late fall. After several hard frosts in early summer, spray the undersides of leaves with an insecticide once a week for 3 weeks. Alternatively, treat repeatedly with a detergent spray. The tendrils of the Virginia creeper are best suited to the sides of masonry buildings, though, city or even in country, climbing as high as 60 feet. Virginia creeper is similar in habit to the grapevine or clematis or clematis. In early fall, the long, coarsely toothed leaves change from green to brilliant scarlet, creating a flaming backdrop for clusters of blue-black berries. This bright accent lasts well late into fall, when most other plants have faded away. Like the hop, the Virginia creeper makes an excellent ground cover when not supported. So the two relatives, Engelmann's ivy and Boston ivy, are full-fledged town vines, favored for their ability to cling to stone or brick. Engelmann's ivy, an elegant variant first introduced in the late 19th century, bears smaller foliage than its wild cousin and its leathery texture. The plant's tighter, less relaxed habit of growth gives it a more refined appearance. Less vigorous than Virginia creeper, Engelmann's ivy shows the versatility as a ground cover, a screen, and as a climber over stone walls and trellises. The densely overlapping leaves of the Boston ivy make it the perfect city vine. Unaffected by dirt and pollution, it grows best on stonework and bricks, clinging tightly by means of small adhesive suckers. Introduced from Japan in 1862, Boston ivy's glory is its full appearance. Cloaked in a harmonious mixture of crimson and gold, it's the perfect October cover. Its purple-blue fruits are especially attractive to birds. So all of these vines tolerate dry or even wet conditions, sun or partial shade. For best results, set roots in moist but well-drained, loamy soil 3 inches apart. Prune woody stems in early spring and restrain or redirect growth, or to induce side branching. Propagate new vines from spring cuttings or from self-rooted stems themselves. So let's just talk a little bit about vines on buildings, because we have to be very careful with our historic dwellings. But while vines can complement the old house landscape, planting should be carefully considered and controlled. Twining vines like the hop and vines with tendrils like the Virginia creeper should be encouraged to grow on lattices anchored to the house or on freestanding trellises or fences. Climbing vines that attach themselves using adhesive suckers or root-like anchors should never be used on painted wood. Clapboards or shingles, and even if the vine is pulled away, these anchors will remain, weakening the integrity of the wood surface. Most clinging vines are less of a threat to masonry buildings, relatively harmless to sound brick or even stone. The adhesive suckers on vines such as Boston ivy are rarely attached permanently to mortar joints because of the vine's subtle movements. Vines that gain hold through root-like anchors, such as English ivy, should be kept off brick totally because they may even penetrate and eventually split the mortar. Stone walls with relatively few mortar joints make the most durable surface for climbing vines. Assuming the foundation is sound, a stone wall will support a thriving vine forever. To remove a vine such as ivy safely from a wall, first cut the plant at the roots, allow it to dry for 2 or 3 weeks. Pull the dried vine carefully off in sections. Never pull live vines away from a wall, since this may damage brick or mortar or painted wood surfaces. Greg Perry, the historic preservationist, signing out. Thanks for listening.